Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Successful-ish. I'm Sarah Michelle. And today on the podcast, I am really excited to chat with our guest. Tessa Terry is the owner and designer of Alchemy RV Renovations. She turns small spaces into something completely next level, something like home. And I highly recommend you check her out. Look at some of the amazing spaces she's created in her RV portfolio, alchemyrvrenovations.com. You will not believe that these are RVs. It will make you want to sell your house and go buy a tiny bus. I have always had an appreciation for artists and designers, but especially in the past few months as I have been renovating my own house. Y'all, HGTV is a lie. It is really freaking hard to visualize a cohesive space in your head and to figure out how to make it all come together. To know what paint colors, what flooring, what furniture layouts can make a room taller, longer, smaller, darker. It is truly amazing the difference that a single element, even something super tiny like a throw pillow, can make in a room. And one thing I've noticed in the past few years in working from home and visiting different clients' homes and offices, spending a lot more time inside post-COVID, there really is an energy that gets created from the space we're in. It can really dramatically impact our mood, our optimism, our productivity, our worldview, and bigger is not always better. So I'm excited to chat with Tessa today about how we can live luxuriously, even in the smallest of spaces. Tessa, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So before we jump in the conversation, what is something you failed at this week?
So I think that question hits differently since it's the first week of the year, because we always have like such big plans and like expectations. So one that I've been failing at, for years now is trying to get my sleep schedule in order. I was so excited to start off the year by getting to bed at like 10 o'clock. That has not happened at all. So yeah, I failed at that pretty bad this week.
Are you naturally more of a night person or a morning person?
I don't know. I feel like as I'm getting older, I enjoy being up early. Like actually a couple weeks ago, I was doing pretty good where I was waking up at like 7 and going to the gym, which was awesome. And then I don't know, I just went off the rails. I think I'm definitely more of a night owl naturally.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting because I used to just think I had so much shame growing up because I am in a family of morning people and I'm the night person. And so yeah. It's this shame of like, oh, Sarah is just lazy and she sleeps in. And like, I would try so hard. And like, I'm not human at 5 a.m. I know.
I'm the same way. I'm trying to, but we'll see. Maybe not 5 a.m. I just want to wake up at like 7. That'd be great. Getting there.
There's this like mood light that is supposed to, I don't know. It's supposed to replicate like being in the natural sunshine. It's supposed to help your circadian rhythm.
I've seen those. Yeah.
Like help you get over sad and depression and all of that stuff. And so a naturopath recommended it and I just got mine this week. So I will let you know how it works.
Yeah, please.
But at the least, it's very pretty. It looks like sunshine in my room. Yeah.
Hey, and just like you were saying, good design can change your mindset. So that's cool. Even if it doesn't work for its intended purpose, at least it's pretty.
Exactly. Yeah. So share a little bit about your story. Like, how did you get into this very unique line of work? And what brought you to where you are today?
Yeah. So it is definitely unique what I do. I grew up a bit differently from most people, I think. I was a very ambitious overachiever kid. Like I graduated at 14. I was like, I started my own business when I was 8, selling like desserts and stuff to people. So I was like, I was just on a mission. And so, yeah, I grew up like that. My parents owned a Victorian lamp. They own a Victorian lampshade company. And so I also grew up with designs all the time. Like we always had a spare bedroom that was full of fabric and colors and textures. And then I also grew up seeing other designers' work. So that was really inspirational to me, but also just kind of normal. You know, when you grow up like that, you're used to it as a kid. So that was cool. And then, you know, I've always been a hard worker in that way, but I also prioritize living life to the fullest and not just focusing on like a career. So this business for me is really important because it's not just a business. It's something that I actually enjoy doing, and I don't feel like I'm working all the time and working my life away. So it's cool.
Awesome. What was the first RV that you renovated? How did that come about?
So it was in 2021, and I found a camper online for sale, and I went to go check it out. I really don't know why. I had no experience with campers or anything. And when I went to it, I really thought about all the like super cool apartments in New York City and like penthouses and things that are like millions of dollars, but the square footage is like nothing. And I thought, you know, it's the same space, so why can't I create a home out of this space? And I looked around online to see what other people were doing. And there was people who were upgrading spaces, but they still felt like a camper. And that's just not what I was, that's not the vision. I wanted to make it like a home. So I bought that camper totally on a whim. I was, you know, I thought it would work out good, but I was also ready for it not to. I thought if I gave it my best and it didn't turn out, so what? You move on. But it did. It came out really well. It took me 6 months on the first one because my husband was working full time at the time and we have kids. And 6 months later, I listed it for sale and it sold within 24 hours. Apartment Therapy noticed me and did an article about it. So that was really cool. And I dove in after that and went full time.
So what is the like the rough cost estimate or investment that's involved in like in owning a beautiful RV?
Yeah. So my prices when I sell them vary so much because the sizes are so different. So you can work with like a tiny one that would fit one person and it's 20, 25 feet. The first one I ever did, I sold for $35,000. I have one coming up in a couple weeks that will be $80,000. So I know that's like a big price difference, but it really depends on like the size and the year and all that stuff. I try to keep my renovations under 10 years old. So they're not like vintage trailers. They're like brand new when I'm done with them. But it depends on the size.
It's kind of amazing because you look at how expensive houses are these days. Yeah. Or even like you mentioned a tiny little apartment. I know when I moved from Boston, I was looking at studios and one bedrooms that were $3,500 a month.
Yeah. Like yeah, especially Boston. I have a friend who lives in Boston and I've like looked at real estate there and it's crazy. I mean, it's beautiful, but yeah, the prices are up there.
Gorgeous, but teeny little spaces. And like, I have two big dogs. And so just thinking about like, it's going to be $3,500 a month and I'm still going to have to pay anytime. Like there's only so much space in the house. And so I'm curious. I know that one thing that you are so good at, like you look at these pictures and they don't look like campers, they look more spacious. So what are some of the top things that make a space feel more luxurious or feel more open?
I think a lot of design elements. As far as more space, one of the first things that I tell people if they want to like DIY it is the window treatments. Especially in RVs and campers, you're working with shorter ceilings. That's why I like working with fifth wheels because they're taller, but still it's like a cramped space. So one thing I do in my renovations is I do floor to ceiling curtains. I do custom curtains myself. I sew them all and everything. So that's how I can get away with all the weird lengths and everything. But I actually install my curtain rods from the ceiling. So they're really tall and that makes a huge difference. Of course, color, when you have something that's brown from top to bottom, it's going to feel smaller and more cramped. But I also think that attention to detail, especially when you're working in a small space, makes it feel luxurious and makes a huge difference because, you know, if you go cheap on some things in a big space, you might not notice it. When it's in that small of a space, you're going to notice it. So definitely attention to detail makes all the difference.
So I want to talk a little bit more about color because this is something that I personally struggle with. So I'm kind of selfishly wanting to pick your brain and expertise on this. I feel like when it comes to color and how things photo and looking more open. We're in a very grayish era. Like everything is white or beige. It's very neutral. It's very open and tan, which is beautiful. It's lovely in photos, but also not the most personality. And I tend to be on the darker side. Like I like the blacks and the olives and the navies. Like I like those kind of richer, you know, the kind of the old money colors, I guess I would call it. Like if you step into the really vintage Victorian mansions and they have that like black and white aesthetic.
Definitely.
And it has been interesting because when I painted this house, I couldn't help myself. I went with my black and white aesthetic that I've loved since I was a kid. And I have learned that color looks differently depending on where you paint it and what textures.
Oh, yeah. So
what are some things to keep in mind when we're playing with color? Like what will immediately make a room look larger rather than smaller?
So I agree with you totally. Like I love warm colors and I love adding depth, not just the grayish thing, which I hope is kind of going out in like last year stuff, because that was like 2023 hardcore. But yeah, I mean, you can brighten up rooms without painting everything white. You know, I do a lot of dark colors. And in fact, I did one renovation where I did the whole kitchen in almost black. And then I did like a white fake marble countertop and white backsplash and stuff. I think it's really about picking and choosing and not going overboard on the dark colors, but especially in small spaces. But yeah, there's a balance you have to find. And it's kind of like you mentioned at the very beginning, how even like a throw can make a difference. It really can. You might think you need to paint your walls all white to make it feel bigger, when in reality, you can paint them dark. And if you have light decor, that makes a huge difference. So it really depends on each space, but it does come down to the small little details and the balance.
Yeah, I think it's been really amazing as I've put things together. There's been instances where like my entire dining room looked different by putting a bowl on the table.
Yeah.
A little bit of lightness and it changed the entire room, or just, you know, adding in a lighter color as a throw pillow on a couch. And I feel like a lot of times too, we can be afraid to play with color. And I know this is something that many people in my family suffer from, it almost feels like we're afraid to use color. And so we make everything match. Like for it to go together, it has to be matching. And so we think, okay, we have to like, everything has to be blue and yellow, and the only colors we can use, or everything has to be black and white, and those are the only colors we can use. So how do you incorporate, how do you stick to a palette where it all makes sense, but also incorporate color so that it doesn't look all stale and matching?
Yeah, I'm so against, when I do design consultations, that's one thing I try to talk people out of. They say, oh, but this is, you know, I have one little blind that's gray, so doesn't that mean my kitchen needs to be gray? And this, you know, you can think outside the box and you can mix colors and still make them flow. I think advice wise, if you're trying to do it yourself, I made these 6 foot tall pin boards in my my office at home, and I do mood boards all the time. There's a place called Sampleize, and they're really cool because they send you huge samples of paint, like anything you could think of. So like when I have an idea and I start putting together colors, I'll grab fabric and I'll put them up on my pin board, paint. I'll take pictures of things that I want. And sometimes something you thought would look really cool just is a little bit off, and it's much better to see that on a mood board than actually buying it. But yeah, I don't know. You seeing it all put together, I think that really helps a lot. And it, you don't have to have everything the same color for sure, though. You can make it flow and have different depths and textures in there.
And I feel like part of the challenge with design too, is I think that there are certain design principles that can be really helpful, but I also feel like a lot of it is intuition. A lot of it is just that intuitive knowing, and even just knowing, like you could have a great eye and put together this great palette, but it's just not the right space for it.
Yeah.
Like for the house is asking for a different aesthetic. Yep. So as best as you can, how would you like how, what is your process, I guess, for being in touch with that intuition and trusting it and listening to it? And how would you explain that to someone else?
That's such a complex question for me, but a good one, because that's one of the reasons why I don't do typical work as an interior designer. A lot of people come to me and say, ask me to do their homes and to do, like tell them what to do. When I was 4 years old, I remember walking into a room and just literally like placing things differently and designing it all in my head. I've been doing that like ever since I've been little. And I think it wasn't until I was actually a grown adult that I realized not everyone just does that naturally in rooms. So like for me, it's a personal struggle definitely to get what's in my head out and to like share it with other people, because I know it'll come out good and like it'll be beautiful. But like to get that out is definitely hard, especially like I don't do sketching or anything like that. So it kind of prevents me from getting that across. But yeah, the mood boards help definitely to get like an idea out to people. I definitely trust my own intuition because that's what I've relied on all this time and it's worked so far. So I guess the result is more important than the process in this case. But yeah, it's tricky for me.
Yeah. And well, I think there's a lot of trust the process too, especially when you're designing something, because it has to look really bad before it looks really good. Yeah. And that was something, you know, moving into, this is my first home and it was decent looking when I moved in. I just wanted to make it my own. And I remember about a month in, like having a moment of just crying. I'm like, I just ruined like a perfectly good home. It was brown and beige and there were some, like it was boring, but it was fine. And now I'm looking at like torn up carpet and torn up floors and like half painted walls and like colors that I'm like, how is this going to work out? And I feel like it was a lot of deep breathing and like, trust the process. And
for sure.
It's crazy because you have this vision in your head and sometimes when you're putting it together and for me personally, I don't know what your circle's like, but like I have a very grayish circle. So everyone around me is like, well, why would like beige? Like everything should be beige and neutral. And that's very not me. I'm very bold with my colors. And so I had a lot of, well, it's your house. Like, as long as you like it. And it was not until it was finished that people were like, oh, I see it now, like this vision that you had in your head, like I see it. So what is that like? Like, how do you trust yourself through the process? And do you let other people in when you're going through that process? Or do you kind of tell them to chill in the back and they can come see the final product?
Yeah, I think I shut other people out to a fault. Like, I'm just like, don't talk to me until I'm done. Wait, watch. And I've been like that for my whole life. But I think I get a lot of that from my mom too. I think she's nicer than me about it and I'm more like outspoken, but you can't design your own house based on like sellability to other people. You can always change things. You can do something and totally fail at it and change it up. Like, I think a really pivotal moment for me in my childhood is so my parents make Victorian lampshades. And I was like 5 and I remember going to my mom and saying, I have the best business idea ever. No one thought of this. It's amazing. And I wanted to put 2 totally different fabrics together and just smack glue on them and stick them on a shade. Worst idea ever. And I remember vividly my mom being like, okay, like, let's do it. Let's see what happens. And I took forever and I just glue everywhere. It was horrible. And I put it together and, you know, it was a fail. And she was like, well, hey, you learned something and, well, you know, it didn't work out. Who cares? Kind of thing. And I think that was a moment for me where I realized that fear of failing wasn't going to be part of my life, because there wasn't failing. It was just, you can mess up, but if you learn from it, it's good. I kind of go the same thing throughout my designs. There's been plenty of times I've brought in a huge couch into my renovations and it was just like, okay, didn't work out like I thought it would. It's going out. Something else is going back in. In a world of like Amazon and easy returns, thank goodness for that. That's helpful. But yeah, you will fail sometimes. There will be design mishaps that do not turn out how you wanted, and it's okay. You got to embrace it. Eventually, you'll get to where you're wanting to go with the design.
Love that. I will have to send you a picture of my favorite lamp because how my mom describes it, that it looks like someone took two mismatched pieces of fabric and just stuck the lamp.
No way.
I need to see it. I'm all about the mixing and matching of patterns and bringing different things together. And I've been that way since I was a kid. Like I was the polka dots and stripes. And in a weird way, I hadn't even made the connection. But when I set my own company and created my own brand, I went with this very like collage aesthetic. So it was a little bit of like vintage with the new, and it was all these different patterns. And the first time a good friend of mine saw it, they were like, wow, like, I mean, it looks professional. It's on a website, but like, it's been you since you were 5 years old. Like you finally just pulled it out. And I think to your point, like a lot of design is very intimate because I feel like there's something about when you're in your space, it should look like you.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that many of us struggle with, especially as women, is like, it is really hard to design a space for, like, for me. Like, it's hard to design a space that you live in because naturally the brain just is like, okay, well, what's going to be great for hosting and what's going to look good in the Instagram pictures?
Other people. Yeah.
What are other people going to like? And it is such an interesting thing because you look at all these beautiful homes that are designed for other people and it's like, okay, but how do you actually live your life? And if you look at a lot of the pictures on Instagram of people's homes, they look like nobody lives in them.
They're not
super practical. They're beautiful, but they're not practical. And so I think there's that aspect of really figuring out what, how do you make it look like you? Like, how do you make it your space? And I also think on the flip side of that, when it comes to luxury, I almost feel like sometimes we feel like something that looks like us cannot be luxurious. Mm-hmm. It's almost like if I've created something, then it will only ever be so-so. But if I walk into something else that someone else did, it's like, oh, well, this looks...
Grass is always greener, kind of.
So how do you kind of find that balance both in your own design and then with your clients of really making it look like them? It has their stuff, but also it has that feeling of luxury.
Well, for me personally, with my house, my husband and I bought a fixer-upper in 2017 and we totally gutted it. We had a little bit of a weird situation because we had to move in 3 months. And like I said, we gutted it. So instead of trying to design my whole house, I literally picked total white and just painted all the walls quickly because it was so important to me to take my time designing it. I knew that slow design, making it practical, making it for me and my family, that was more important than making it kind of pretty quick. So when it comes to renovations that I do, I think especially for small houses, tiny homes, RVs, stuff like that, you can have things that look pretty, but if they're completely impractical and you have no space to store anything, I mean, it only goes so far. So luxury to me is definitely making it practical. But also, you know, in craftsmanship and the things that I buy really high quality pieces. So that's a luxury. You know, if you have something that's super cheap and it's going to fall apart in a year or two, you know, that's not great. So I try to keep things high quality, but also practical for people living in small spaces.
I think having that dual purpose of the functionality of things in the home makes a big difference.
For sure.
I think many, especially like in the millennial generation, you think about like the quintessential 80s or 90s home. It was just packed with clutter and like every closet was full of clutter and under the beds are full of clutter. And
no, was that everybody? I guess so. Yeah.
I feel like that was like an 80s and 90s thing. And I think that's why all millennials now are so into the minimalism.
Really... Remember the grape kitchens? You know how the kitchens always had grapes? I had a grape kitchen growing up. I feel like we all had like similar childhoods, but yeah.
Had a grape kitchen where they had like the fake grapes that hung down.
So many. I had like a pot holder that was grapes and I thought it was super cool when I was like 5, but yeah.
Yeah. We had growing up, like our house was always presentable to the public. Like it was very organized, but you didn't want to open any closet.
Yeah. the right. linen closet and the hallway would just like flood out. Yeah. Yeah.
With, in appearance clean was yes. How I would refer to our home. Yeah. And so I think that has put in me this itch where like the most organized parts of my home are the closets.
Yeah.
My linen closet it's almost pornographic. It's so beautiful. Like, I just want to stand in the hallway and like everything is organized and labeled and it brings me so much joy.
Isn't that weird? So I actually changed out. I have a hallway in my house because it was built in 1960 and I have a linen closet at the end. And I actually changed the door out to one with like French windows just so I can look at it because I wanted to organize it and I wanted everyone to like see it. I want to be like, look at what I did to my towels. Look at how perfectly folded they are. Yeah, I know that feeling.
I understand that. I'm very into the open shelving and my parents are like, why? Like, you're supposed to have doors so you can keep everything hidden. I'm like, no. Like,
no.
You have the secret of cabinets and refrigerators. Everyone can see how organized yeah. everything is.
Yeah, totally. No.
That's so funny. What do you think are the biggest like home offenses that people are creating that are making their space not as great? Like, what are the worst things that we're doing in our spaces?
You know, I really don't think it's a certain design because I to my core think that if it's like it makes you happy design wise then do it, even if it's like hideous to like 90% of other people. If it genuinely inspires you, go for it. I think my biggest thing is people who use really cheap materials and don't do research on how to put them up. So like the craftsmanship part is bad. Like I see a lot of people using in RV renovations, for example, not professionals, but people trying to make their spaces look better. They'll go on Amazon and buy like a $5 roll of peel and stick wallpaper and do a huge area, which I'm not bashing all peel and stick because it's all made differently, but you have to be selective when you're doing a big space. You might have to spend a little bit more money to get the quality. I think the same thing in houses too, really just doing, you can still be on a budget and get good quality materials and, taking the time to really learn how to do the job well, make it last. That's my pet peeve, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like too, one of the biggest things that makes a difference in a space, because it's amazing to me, I have art pieces and random stuff that has traveled with me since, I mean, I think I have stuff since when I was growing up as a kid. And it's amazing that no matter what space I've lived in, like different layouts, different color palettes, different everything, somehow they've found a way to kind of merge into the design. And I know a big piece of that is being able to figure out like how to have some kind of a through line or something that is cohesive through the space. So can you share a little bit about what that means and how we go about doing that?
Like, what do you mean exactly? Like you take things that are like you personally and you can work them into each design or?
Yeah. Like when I watch HGTV or I talk to different designers, they kind of talk about having this through line where the space feels cohesive, even if you're mixing in like an old picture that came through from family or you're blending different colors or different elements, there's that aspect of it being cohesive that makes it yeah. feel like it's finished. And I think that's something that I struggle with. Many of us struggle with of, okay, it's really easy to go to a store, to go to a Home Goods, to go to wherever and say, okay, I like this piece. But then we're not really thinking through like, okay, where is this going to fit in my house? How does this fit into my space? The train of thought is just, I like this piece. And then we end up with a bunch of random things and we don't know what to do with them. So
yeah.
How do we find that cohesiveness?
Yeah, I think it is being picky and not always going with it, even if you kind of like it. I have, the way I design things is I spend weeks designing my rigs, but there's also times when I found something a year and a half ago and I loved it and I wanted to work it into a design, but I just didn't for quite a while because it just didn't fit. So only you can really decide that, but sometimes you just can't use things and you can't try to force it. I think that's part of being cohesive in a design is not forcing things. And you know, if you really love something that's just kind of out there, you can work a design around that. But if you're not willing to, and you don't, you know, you can't force it, you know, you have to really know that you love it and it works for your space. But it doesn't always have to be about color too. It's, you know, shape, texture, just the style of it. It depends on a lot of different things for sure.
I think that is one of my life aspirations, is to have a warehouse like a Chip and JoJo have, where
Yeah. Just
gets to save all the pretty things and just knows like someday I'm going to find the perfect space for this.
Yeah, I just actually built a 700 square foot shed in my back for like a workshop for me, because I was working all in my RVs and half the time outside under my porch. So like I finally have a space where I can like store things and work in it. And that's so helpful. Oh my goodness. I know that's not something most people can have, but I needed it desperately with all the rigs that I was doing. So it definitely would be cool to have something like that though. Keep it a little bit better organized than mine.
So yeah. I'm curious too about layout, because I know that a lot of times with homes, they talk about how you're supposed to set up zones and you don't want to have everything pushed against the walls. If you're in an RV, obviously everything is going to be pushed up against the walls. And so what I think is really amazing about the work that you do is that the way that it's laid out, it does not look like you're walking through an RV. It looks like you're walking through a home. So what are some of those layout tips that kind of change a space into feeling more homey?
Yeah, a lot of thought gets put into that. Not only is it that you have to push everything against a wall, but you also have slide outs to work with. So literally the walls come in on themselves and you can't just have stuff hanging out in the middle. So yeah, a lot of thought gets put into that. I think a big thing for me is I don't cram my space. Like a rig that I'm working on right now, it's a huge slide out that I have, but really the table originally when I bought it, it was four seater and it was so crammed. It was like four people couldn't comfortably sit there. So I turned that into a two seater. And then on another slide out, I made it available for like an eating space too, but on a sofa. And so yeah, you don't cram in stuff. And I think I also look at everything like, would you see this in a home? And if you wouldn't, if it looks like a camper, I tried to change that. Even like the slide outs themselves, they have trim around them. And I think, you know, would you see trim around a kitchen in a home? No. So I try to blend that in instead of making it stand out. And a lot of those little details put together make a really home-like space, which is, it's cool, but it takes a lot of effort and a lot of awareness constantly, because things, you know, is changing all the time.
So what does luxury mean to you? Like, what does that word, what's your definition?
I think luxury to me means, of course, something beautiful, but something long-lasting, something high quality, and something practical. So even like with the sofas that I buy, a lot of times in pictures, you'll just see the sofa, but they really open up to storage space. So especially in those tiny spaces, it's great to have things that are practical, easy to take care of, but also beautiful and high end and will last you a long time.
I love that definition because it feels so opposite of any definition I've ever heard of luxury. I feel like...
Really?
Yeah. When I hear the word luxury, I think it almost immediately equates to unnecessary.
Yeah.
In my mind, like when I think of luxury, you know, if you think about like, I don't know, a luxury vehicle, like, okay, well the Corolla is going to get you to and from, but like luxury is really like status.
It's extra.
Or, Yeah. You know, luxury, lifestyle is like the lavish, you know, going to the spa every day and just all these superfluous things that aren't really needed. They're just like extra over the top. And so to change that definition to something that is practical, something that you can use every day, I feel like that's really powerful because that means you're not just in a luxurious space, like you're a part of that. Like that luxury is now a part of your lifestyle. And I know that that is something that you talk about, like in your mission of something that feels like home. So my next question, how do you define home? Like, what does that mean to you?
Oh man. I mean, home is where you feel inspired. Home is where you feel safe and you feel, I guess a good way to describe home is describing the opposite. And I think of if you had to stay in like a really horrible hotel for a night, you're uncomfortable. You're probably not going to have any like epiphanies and, you know, inspirations in there. You want to leave. You just feel on edge. And I feel like home is the exact opposite of that. You walk in and you can just let go. You can be inspired to achieve goals. You can relax. You know, you can have your family there and be happy and be proud of the space that you're in. It's all the opposite things of feeling uncomfortable. It's feeling at home.
Yeah, I think what's really cool about that too is that with doing this with RVs, your home is moving a lot of the time. Like your home can be in one place one day and one place the other. And I know I've moved around a lot, especially in recent years. I've done cross-country trips, and it was interesting when I did my solo cross-country trip a couple of years ago. I had in my mind like, okay, I want a move, I want a change. I need to be somewhere that feels like home. And I kind of drove across the country like, all right, what's my vibe? Like, what state do I feel like these are my people? This is my energy. And it was a really interesting process because I'm such a contentedly unsettled, as it's been described in the past, where I just am a very both and person. Like I want the quaintness of New England, but I also want the city hustle of New York, but I also want the mountains of Colorado, but I also want the desert of Utah. Like I want all of it. And I think I think for many of us, especially in a modern world where we have access to travel and social media, like we're exposed to opportunity that we never had before. We're exposed to such a bigger world where we don't have to be confined to just what's around us. It really could be anything we want it to be. So when you're thinking about kind of in your life and creating that home space and being able to travel and all of that, like what are some things that help you stay rooted and kind of carry that feeling of home with you no matter where you are?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, for me, of course, it's my family is everything to me. Like my kids and husband, we talk about that all the time, how it sounds super cheesy, but like having each other, you know, you could find home anywhere. But I think you attract what you put out there. And so, we love traveling. We travel a lot. Our life goal is to move to the south of France. That's what we're working towards. We love that, scenery, but I have family in New York, Arizona. So I love it all. I think traveling wise, if you're not like in an RV, if you're not bringing your home with you, I love looking for Airbnbs and I try to find ones that resonate with me design wise. And it's so fun to stay at places like that. But, the RV thing is great. And I also started the business with the idea that for people like my age, like millennials, you know, money's tight. Most of us can't even afford one home, much less buy an investment property to rent out. So I think the RVs are great for being able to travel in, but also for an investment to make money so you can travel yourself. You know, the Airbnb potential, the rental potential is awesome there. I don't know. I think it's a really cool opportunity on both counts there.
So I have one more kind of heavier question for you. So being in the line of work that you are, it's very much about improvement, about taking a space and kind of bringing it to its maximum potential and making it better, which I think is something that all of us kind of want to do. But where do you find, like, what does that balance look like between finding contentment of like, this is home, I'm happy with what is, I'm happy with my space, but also wanting to improve, like as there's new materials, as things get older and need to be updated, what does that balance look like for you?
So I know in my home, I'm always wanting to do things, but I have, as I've gotten older, especially realized the value of just being content with how things are. I think the most important thing is to be true to yourself and to be authentic and not let trends get in the way. Trends are always changing. And if you do color of the year this year, it will be different next year. So if you love it and you love the new thing and you want to change that, go for it. Life is change and flexibility. But at the same time, if you're doing it because you're thinking about what others might think, what others might like, like you were talking about, like hosting and, you know, Instagram worthy, all that stuff, that's when I would really take a step back and try to see the deepness of, am I actually content with my space? Because at the end of the day, that's much more important than following trends.
Kind of curious, do you feel like there's any correlation between like design capability or design eye and self-awareness?
Yeah, I do. I think, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know how to explain this, but I do know that people who are unorganized and have a hard time reaching goals, a lot of times will find themselves in very cluttered spaces. So it's not just about like, it's nothing to do with money. It's nothing to do with luxury and high design. But if you have a space, I feel like your space is like a window into who you are, and that's what you put out. So yeah, I think it has a correlation. I think it's really important that if you want to be successful, your space has to reflect that. And that can look different for everyone, but it is really important what you surround yourself with.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting correlation to think about. And just thinking about people who are very picky and kind of always hate whatever their space looks like, they always hate whatever it is because they're very unsettled. Like you think about someone like Joanna Gaines, where no matter how many projects she does, they all look like Joanna Gaines.
Yeah.
I feel like I could walk into any home in Texas and immediately know if she
call it out
on it, because she just can't help herself. And I noticed that in my own home as well. I had looked at all these magazines, and the concept was to Airbnb it out eventually. And so I was trying to think about it in this, okay, what is going to sell? What's going to be rentable? And I couldn't help myself. It looks exactly like me. Like it just, it came out. And so how does that, when you're working with other clients, like how do you, I guess, walk that line between getting to know who they are and making it feel like them, or encouraging them in that, but also like you're the one who's doing the design. So how much of you is in each home that you do?
So I'm at a very, very interesting point in my design career where that's a really big, important thing to me. I don't work with clients who have a completely 180 vision of what I typically do. And it's not because, you know, if someone came to me and they wanted a totally like Western rustic space, I'm not going to take on that client. And it's not because I think that's a bad look at all. It's because that's not what I'm best at. I try to stay true to my own design so I can produce the highest quality rooms that I possibly can. And so for those people looking for things like that, like I do design consulting and I help them find things for their space and I help them keep it personal to them. But when it comes to like doing custom jobs for myself, typically my clients come to me already loving my designs, and there's not much changing to them. Like we'll do personal touches, but like the overall style is very much me. And you know, custom jobs are a very small bit of my job. Typically I buy the rigs myself, I design them myself, and then I sell them, kind of like flipping houses. So yeah, but that's definitely important to me to stay true to my own designs, and I try to be consistent with that.
Yeah. And it's a good thing to note too, because I feel like a lot of people, we hear the term interior designer, we see someone who does design and just kind of assume, well, if someone does design, they do design.
Yeah.
And they're all the same and we're not as picky. And I know the same thing, like I work in the world of marketing and it's very similar. We're like, oh, you do marketing. It's all the same. But I think anything that has creativity involved in it, you have to kind of know the heart of the creator. Like you have to know yourself well enough to know, are we aligned? Like, is this the right personality? Is this the right energy? And if it's not a match, that doesn't necessarily mean that that person is not exceptionally talented. It just means that it's a mismatched aesthetic between the two.
For sure. Yeah. All my clients, I talk to thoroughly before, not just about the design, but just getting to know them. And I can tell instantly. And it's not like I'm trying to make sure, are they good enough for me? It's nothing like that. It's that we can both collectively work together to reach a goal. That's super important, especially when you're designing a space that you're in all the time. So yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise. And definitely, if you are listening, seriously, take some time and go look at some of these pictures, alchemyrvrenovations.com. Tessa, thank you so much. For anyone listening, would love to hear your thoughts, questions, comments. Shoot us an email at embracetheish@gmail.com or hang out with us online at successfulish.com or Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn at embracetheish.
Success and failure, none of opposite ends. Curveball hits, gotta know where to bend. The attitude will affect destination. And if you determines when you're gonna make it. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Hey, successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. Hey. All this weight on my arms need both flex. In this race, but behind need most steps. Had to swear the learning curve, hope I don't crash. Hit your nerves when reserves got low cash. When I fail, realize that it won't last. You made it through in the past, just look back. Successful-ish, you can see how the contrast failures and wins. Use the past and then bounce back. You can never win if you never go and do it. Failure is a hard road, rarely ever cruising. Embracing all my wins with a handful of losing. Expect the drought season when the plan's going fluent. I can never really fail, it's all how you view it. It's all a lesson, just depends how you use it. Gather all the data and keep it all exclusive. Never ending journey and the growth is therapeutic. My identity is not in what you see, I am the better me. Mistakes others make, I see. Have been teaching me. Compare yourself to others is an insult to tragedy. We are made unique, gotta use again collectively. Broke down my goals and a few look toesome. Can't take them back cause you already spoke them. Easily regress if you don't stay focused. Focus, live between success and moment. Successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.